show this in three dimensions. We can just take this trajectory of the paper plane and form it into a point, which means nothing happens. And so, assuming the wave function changes by the phase factor under each of these exchanges, we see that the phase of the phase factor can either assume value 0 or pi, corresponding to boson fermions, respectively. However, in two dimensions, we cannot take, not deform this trajectory into a point, and so it's possible to have phase factors with phases which are not 0 or pi, and this is denoted as anions. In order to understand what are non-abelian anions, we take a look at a slightly more mathematical description. So let's consider a fixed number of anions in, and consider their space-time trajectories, which take them from initial positions at initial time to a permutation of their positions at a final time, which is shown in these figures. So the time axis is the vertical axis. And each equivalence class of such world lines is that is invariant under smooth deformations is denoted as a braid. And different braids correspond to different elements of the braid group, which is defined by these two relations, where the sigma I's generate exchanges between neighboring particles. And now we consider representations of the braid group. The abelian one-dimensional representations were already considered on the first slide, which are simply phase factors, and in that case, the order of exchanges of particles is irrelevant. However, if we have a system described by high-dimensional representations of braid group, these may be non-abelian. In that case, we have a set of degenerate basis states of a fixed number of anions at fixed positions. And if we now consider a process, we start from an initial state, and now we first exchange these two and then these two particles, or vice versa. This does not necessarily result in the same state, since now the exchange is described by a matrix, which is applied to our initial state. Okay. So non-abelian anions have recently become popular because of a potential application denoted as topological quantum computation. Roughly, the idea is to have a system which has a Hilbert space or sub-Hilbert space spanned by such a set of degenerate states with a fixed number of anions at fixed positions. And then one unitarily evolves on this space by braiding the anions. And for most classes, non-abelian anions, it is actually possible to generate all possible unitary transformations only by braiding, which is denoted as universal topological quantum computation. And what's more important is we need a system which is in a gap phase with non-abelian quadriparticle excitations, and that's usually denoted as non-abelian topological phase. Systems that potentially are non-abelian topological phases, the most popular ones are chiral p-wave superconductors and certain fractional quantum Hall states. So the chiral p-wave superconductor and the fractional quantum Hall state with filling fraction 5/2 has quasi-particle excitations whose statistical properties are those of so-called Ising anions. And the quasi-particle excitations of the fractional quantum Hall state with filling fraction 12/5 has the statistical properties of Fibonacci anions. So these are results from field-theoretical approaches and have not been shown so far in experiments, or these braiding properties have not been verified so far in experiments. What has been verified is, for example, the fractional charge of one of these two fractional quantum Hall states. The field-theoretical description of topological phases is very well understood. Basically, it's topological quantum field theories. However, there's not so much known about microscopic models that give rise to non-abelian topological phases. The most popular one is probably the one of Kitaev. Our model is closely related to a model introduced by Levin and Wen, and I will come back to that in a moment. And one motivation of our work is, for example, to first understand such models, also maybe to find models which are simple enough to realize them in magnetic systems or in optical lattice systems, and in a more general framework to actually understand models of interacting anions. before talking about Fibonacci anions and specifically, I'm just trying to contrast the properties or the difference between, for example, spin degrees of freedom and anionic degrees of freedom. So in the case of spin degrees of freedom, if we have a system which is infinitely large, we can have spins, if we have spin 2, spin 1 half, we can add up to a spin 1, and we have another 1 half can give us 3 half, et cetera, and we can basically have the spin can take values between 0 and infinity. In the case of anions, we have a cutoff. So we have this k here. So different k's basically give rise to different classes of non-abelian anions, and we have a limited number of what I call species here, or could say types of anions. Fusion rules is basically the addition of angular momenta or of spins, and also here we have a cutoff. So now more specifically, Fibonacci anions is one of these classes here, and it has two species. One is I'm changing now to the notation which is usually used for Fibonacci anions. One is a one. One is basically something like the vacuum particle. So one also means there's nothing, because that's going to be important in a moment. And a second one, which is usually noted as tau. The fusion rules, which means if we combine two Fibonacci anions, these fusion rules, there's one fusion rule which is not trivial, because if we have two taus, they can either give a one or a tau. And this is usually depicted in such diagrams. So we have two taus, which are on the links of some trivalent lattice structure, and they can combine to a one, or they can also combine to a tau. And yeah, this is the relation. Okay, so I mentioned the Levin-Wen model before. The Levin-Wen model basically is a whole class of models, and they basically are a lattice realization of topological quantum field theory. We consider a particular model whose degrees of freedom are Fibonacci anions. So they consider it as a spin 1/2 model. So you have spin 1/2 degrees of freedom on the links of the honeycomb lattice, so here. And we already keep in mind we associate one of the spins with a tau and the other one with a one. And the Hermitonian has two terms. The first term, the vertex term, what this term does, it enforces the fusion rules of Fibonacci anions and these vertices. So it means this term basically assigns an energy gain if the fusion rules are not obeyed at a vertex of this lattice. And the second term, so-called Paquette term, measures the anion flux, is not the correct word, but the anion degree of freedom, which goes through a plaquette. So this term is rather complicated, involves a lot of transformations, so that's why I didn't show it in detail here. So that the model is exactly solvable, these two terms commute. And it naturally gives rise to two types of quasi-particle excitations that are Fibonacci anions. So one is this plaquette type excitation. So we either have a one or a tau in the plaquette, and the tau is the excitation, I'll try to show here. Or we can have vertex type excitation. This is basically when we have a fusion rule not obeyed in one of these vertices, and that means we have an excitation there. There's another important feature of multi-anion systems, and that is that the Hilbert space of a multi-anion system is defined by a certain topology. And for example, in the context of topological quantum field theory, anions are associated with the punctures of a surface. And so if we start from a certain surface, in our case this is a high-genus surface, so we have these punctures here. So the surface, we have these punctures, and it's periodically connected, so here the ends and the end are connected. Now we can decompose the surface into three punctured spheres, and there's actually a variety of possibilities to do this. So we chose one here. These are these cuts here. We have three punctured spheres, and now they put anions on these punctures, and we connect them, and we end up with this trivalent structure again. In this case, it's a ladder, but it could be something else if we decompose differently. And so the ladder is the basis of our system, and we have the Fibonacci anion degrees of freedom. So we have these Fibonacci anions on these length of the ladder, and we have the fusion rules obeyed at the length. We have a hard constraint, so we don't allow for any violations of this fusion constraint. And our Hamiltonian consists of two terms, which don't come here, so the model is not exactly solvable. The first term is the Sackett term we just discussed in the Levin-Wen model. So without the second term, our model is actually just a realization of the Levin-Wen model on the ladder. So this is the Sackett term. Yeah, here I'm showing the whole Sackett term, but I'm not going to explain in detail. The second term is the Runge term. The Runge term is diagonal to the space. It simply assigns an energy gain if there is a tau anion on the Runge. And here it assigns an energy gain if there is a tau anion through the Sackett. So here we have the phase diagram. So as I said before, the model is not exactly solvable. So we use exact diagonalization, or mostly use exact diagonalization, in order to obtain the energy spectra. Since we have translation and reflection symmetries, we obtain it in terms of quantum numbers kx and ky. So we parameterize in terms of one parameter theta, and that's why the phase diagram is shown on a circle. So basically, these two points correspond to the points where the Runge term is zero, and we only have the Sackett term. These two points are the two points where the Sackett term is zero, we only have the Runge term. These points, of course, are trivial. We don't need any numerical study for that. So roughly speaking, what we find is we have two large non-Hermitian topological spaces. We have two critical points which can be solved exactly. We also have an extended critical phase here. And we have also a duality, which is in the sense that the spectra are identical, but only up to the degeneracy. So the degeneracies are different, which is along this symmetry, this red axis here. So actually, the spectrum here looks the same as here, except that the degeneracies are different. So this non-Abelian topological phase with two-fold degenerate ground state, and here it is four-fold degenerate. And I'm now going to explain more detailed properties of these non-Abelian topological phases. So one interesting point is that we can explain these properties of it, such as degeneracies, which are related to the topology of the system by just looking at these exactly solvable points. So what we do for the ground state, we basically consider this point and this point, which are in the middle of these non-Abelian topological phases. And at this point where the theta is zero, we don't have the Runge term. We only have this Sackett term, which was measuring the anion going through the Sackett. But since the Sackett term is minimal, if there is no anion going through the Sackett, that means we can actually take these all our punctures here and close them. And if we do this, we end up with a single torus. As I tried to show it here, we have all punctures, our Hamiltonian is minimized if punctures are closed. We end up with a single torus. And on the torus, we have only one base state, and that can assume two values, the one and the tau, which are 2 degrees of freedom, so we have 2-fold ground state degeneracy. Now, in the other non-Abelian topological phase, we only have the Runge term. And the energy is minimal, again, if there is no tau in the Runge. So if we have the one, which is, again, the vacuum, we can cut these Runges here. And then we end up with 2-degree or 4-fold ground state degeneracy, which is also shown here. Oh, sorry.
Question here. Yeah. So you said the anions were going around the ladder, so every sort of, they could go along a horizontal line element or vertical line element in the ladder. Is that so?
They just sit on the length
on
of the
things.
Ladder.
Okay, so what do you mean by an anion going through that puncture, through that plaquette? So that would sort of come out of the stream.
Yes.
So is there other sort of paths for particles?
Yes. Basically, I mean, maybe. basically, you can always, if you have some anion word line, you can always relate it to you know, the a different basis, basically, which goes like that.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically what's done. I mean, you have to do a couple of transformations because you have four and not just one here. But that's what's done. And basically, you transform this. You have such a letter element, and you can basically, you can add a line in the middle. You could have part of this here, but you can always do.
Can't see what you're doing there. Mm-hmm.
Basically, you do this using edge transformations.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the ones, so that you can always put them because it's like nothing. And then you do an S transformation, actually, to get what's going through that.
Okay.
Yeah, we can do a similar consideration for the first excited state. So we can also look at the topologies and explain the degeneracy. For example, in the case of the second of this non-abelian topological case, it's alpha degenerate. In this case, you do a couple of transformations and find that it's 3L4 degenerate. So we can basically explain all the topological properties by relatively simple considerations. So away from these, exactly solvable points, our degeneracies persist, our energy gap persists, so we can do finite size scaling analysis, and we find spectrum, so we have the ground state here, momentum kx, 0x is the direction of the letter. And we have quasi-particle band, which is shown here for several coupling parameters, so that has a leading cosine-shaped dispersion, so we also verify that using perturbation theory, which is the solid lines. There's a bound state, an anti-bound state, and a T-morph scattering state. So what's also interesting, we can actually, since we have these perturbative results, I have the duality that the perturbative results apply around the point of pi half, but since we have the duality, they obviously also apply around the point theta equals to zero, and which is the Levin-Wien point, and basically we can conclude that the Levin-Wien model, if one added a term, which assigns an energy gain, if there's a tau in any of these links of the honeycomb lattice, that this has a stable non-abelian topological phase within a certain region. Apart from these non-abelian topological phases, we found very interesting critical points. So the first critical point here is between two non-abelian topological phases. And the second one is a whole extended critical region. What we did is we tried to map to different unitary minimal models, and we actually found that the unitary minimum model with central charge 14 over 15 matches our energy spectrum. And later on we found that we can actually describe that, or obviously that there's an analytical description of that point, which corresponds to the K equals to 8 restricted solid on solid model. And at the opposite point, our model is described by a parafermionic and conformal field theory with central charge 7 5. Okay, this just shows the mapping of the conformal fields to the energy spectrum. So the blue and the green is the numerical energy spectrum, and these are the conformal field theories. Same here for the other critical point. And basically, I think I'm done. So we studied the modulus degrees of freedom are interacting Fibonacci anions on a high genus surface. We showed the relevance of topology for the properties of non-abelian topological phases, discussed the stability, and found two interesting criticalities described by two-dimensional conformal field theories, which is something people, let's say, the string theory community find quite interesting, because we actually have a microscopic model which is described by some conformal field theory nobody actually knows the model for.
Thank you for your attention. Is there a relationship between the charge and the Chern number? Not being familiar with conformal field theory. Is there a connection between the central charge and the Chern number?
What's the term number?
But it's plus 15.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I know. Well, what's the term? What exactly is the term number?
Well,
no, it's the coefficient in front of. I mean, these.
Yeah, it's the D. No, it's the quantum dimensional. Yeah, there is actually. Because the quantum dimension, the growth of the Hilbert space of our ladder is the what do you call it, turn number of this of this k plus a. Exactly, there is a relation. You can actually guess from looking at the growth of the Hilbert space.
But
it's conformally a theory and not another one.
But you can also pull it right off your numerics, right? Just looking at the.
Yes. That's what I first did.
You said you identified these the critical points. You identified certain conformal field theories by looking at the energy spectrum, but you also know the fields themselves, the corresponding conformal fields, the primary fields.
Yes.
So the matching is more than just the spectrum. You can actually.
Yes, we can actually, and I can do this now. We can actually explain. There's a certain number of fields below two, and one. Actually, has to show that these fields are irrelevant fields, so that they don't drive the system actually out of the critical place. We can show that these fields belong to different sectors of a topological symmetry, and certain way you can argue why it's critical and why these fields are. Yeah. I mean, these fields are different sectors than in the ground state, because otherwise.
Did you say, are those the central charges in the 2D conformal field? All those fraction numbers, you said spurious field. What do you mean by that?
Basically, you can relate the energy spectrum to the conformal dimensions. So these HL, HR is a conformal dimension plus some integer, which is some dependent, call it some conformal weights here. So you have a direct way to compare your spectrum and see whether it's described by a conformal field.
Oh, but in the two cases, you really have a specific central charge. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds
good.
Yes.
Any other question? Okay, let's thank the speaker on the session.